where Bridgeport comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
One of the great quotes, blurbs from another author about this next author is that great novels bring you into a world and let you get to know a world that you didn't know about before. And in doing so, expand your own worldview. Joining us now is Zakiya Dalila Harris. The novel is called The Other Black Girl. It's already a major bestseller, as it should be. I'm going to unqualifiedly recommend that you go get the book because it's a fabulous book. It's a page turner. It's a thriller. It's a mystery. But it's very much more than that. It's also, in some respects, a very real character study and an entree into a world that you may know nothing about. Welcome, Zakiya, to the Lisa Wexler Show today, and congratulations on the success of your novel.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited, too. So let's get all the Connecticut stuff out of the way. Is it true that you grew up in Hamden? Is that right?
That is right. I grew up in Hamden. I was born in New Haven. I lived in West Haven for a little while. But, I went to Westwoods Elementary School, Hamden High. Like, I go back often. I love it.
And can I ask the decade? Are you 30s, 20s, 40s? What are we talking about here?
I just turned 29, I don't mind being called a girl.
Baby, my daughter is 28. Oh my gosh! So your family must be over the moon, Zakiya.
It's been a crazy, wonderful year. We're still all, especially me, I'm pinching myself. I can't believe it.
Well, I want you to know, I finished the whole book. And I devoured the book. And I was actually on vacation with my husband on Block Island over the weekend. And I said, honey, I have to finish the book. So that is really a tribute because, I wanted to get, and I love Block Island, but I said, I have to finish the book. And I love the book. So
I'm honored.
Well, listen, I'm delighted to chat with you. So you talk about Nella, and Nella's the protagonist, and it's from the point of view most of the time of Nella. And I'm believing that there's some similarities with you in that Nella is also a girl who grew up in Connecticut in a more white than not suburban environment. And that's one of the themes of the book about the mixing and the mixing of races, black and white and black and black. Can you talk to us, Zakiya? Were you that black girl that grew up as a minority black in a white suburban neighborhood?
I was, definitely. When I was growing up in the neighborhood I was in Hamden, it was about, late 90s.
Oops, I think we just lost you. Zakiya, come back. Come back. I think we just lost her. Zakiya, if you're listening to me, and I hope that you are, please redial. Otherwise, we're going to, because it looks like you're connected. Yeah, but maybe you hit mute. Is that possible?
No.
No? Are you here?
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good.
I don't know what happened.
It faded out for a second, but
okay.
But sorry about that.
That's okay.
So yes, I definitely was the only black girl often in my classes. This was in the late 90s, and I believe the neighborhood has changed now, but I was oftentimes the only one. So a lot of those experiences that Nella experiences in the book of feeling, like the only one, kind of feeling tokenized, but then also, feeling responsible for bringing the black perspective or feeling, that kind of pressure to speak up about things is something that I definitely experienced for a lot of my young life, but I didn't really think about it until really 7 years ago, I would say.
So when you were growing up, did your family seek out for you to have other black peer friends?
Yes, definitely. We were in Jack and Jill, which, started out as a place for, I believe, middle-class, upper-middle-class black people to congregate with other kind of similar black folk. So that was something I was in, but I also still didn't feel like I fit in with that group either necessarily as a young person. So I kind of was always feeling like I was in between these two worlds, you know?
I do know. And you can't really blend because of the color of your skin. So I'm a Jewish girl, and I grew up mm-hmm. always feeling as the other. My family always felt that they were the other. So they actually settled into a very predominantly Jewish neighborhood so that I wouldn't feel so much like the other. But when I mm-hmm. got to college, I was the only Jew in my dorm. And then I was blackballed from living with them the next year, which later on I knew was because I was Jewish. And they told me that. But here's the thing. I still had white skin. My parents changed their name, right? It went from Kaminkowitz mm-hmm. to Kamen. And so mm-hmm. there's an easier way and a more comfortable way to blend, notwithstanding prejudice. But but when you have a different color skin, you can't do that. You just can't.
Right, definitely. And I was really interested in exploring what blending even means, too. I mean, when you are in these kind of spaces, Nella and myself definitely have a lot of overlap. And because I grew up in these mostly white environments, I was able to kind of talk the talk. You know, I was able to switch and speak the language and, you know, be successful in these spaces, especially publishing, which is where I worked. But then also, you know, going home and kind of trying to take that part off and just be yourself and wishing you could bring the part from home to work. And all of those things are things that, you know, that when I hear people talk about this book with me, black people, brown people, anybody who's been a minority in some way in these spaces has something to say about it. And that's been one of the most interesting things.
We're chatting with Zakiya Dalila Harris. The book is called The Other Black Girl. It's a stunning bestseller. There, you know, one of the things that strikes me, and I really want to get into this with you, as I was reading the book, I was thinking about learning a foreign language. When I have tried to learn Spanish, for example, I am an exuberant, extroverted person. So I will speak Spanish, even though I'm going to make mistakes. Even though I might use the tú form instead of usted and possibly offend someone without meaning to, but that's the way I'm going to learn the language. Mm-hmm. The other option is to not speak at all, right? And then I don't offend anyone, but then I don't learn the language.
Yeah.
I would love you to tell white people, to tell me as a white person in an office context, because that's really what the book is really, what's so gripping about this book is that mm-hmm. it talks about all these micro kinds of interactions between people at a water cooler, people at a desk, and how perceptions and intentions are taken, right? And how offense is taken, but maybe offense is meant, but maybe it isn't meant. Mm-hmm. So you tell me, as a young black woman in the working world today, what's the right way? What's the right way for someone who is not black or brown to begin a friendship and to approach when the language itself is a minefield?
That's a really great question. Do you mean specifically in a workplace setting or just in general?
I would love you to address workplace because that's really what the book is about.
Yeah. Well, I think what it really comes down to, and this is the thing that I think about a lot. I thought about it a lot when I was writing the book, but I also think about it a lot more with these kinds of conversations. And I think the thing is to really, and this seems like it's obvious, but I think really, you know, when a white person is approaching a black person or a person of color, I think just treating them as a human being, which again, I know sounds very obvious, but I think there becomes a problem when the focus is put on race. And I think that with this book, I wanted to emphasize the fact of like Nella's being the only one. She's often, you know, othered. And when she has another black person come into the office, like Hazel, she thinks, great, like I'm not going to be kind of put into this whole group now. I can just be an individual. But of course, she's constantly compared to this new black person at work, and she can't be an individual. So I really think it comes down to seeing the person as an individual, and then also just being open-minded, and also understanding that, like, sometimes your questions might not be answered necessarily. I mean, I think that every Black person, every person of color is different on how they want to be approached, or how they want to talk about these issues, or if they want to talk about these issues at all with white people, because that's another thing too, right, of last year at being feeling like a burden in some ways. So I really think just approaching those kind of interactions with care and understanding that every person, every individual has a different response or different feeling about these kinds of conversations, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. No, I understand that. But, you know, sometimes it's the devil's in the details, because I have a very self-deprecating kind of sense of humor. And, you know, it may not be, okay, so there it is. So it may not be received well by anybody, Black or white, but I don't mean to be, I don't mean to be obnoxiously racist about it. It's just sort of, that is my personality. And sometimes my personality is offensive.
Yeah, yeah, I mean.
You know what I mean? I mean, you know, really,
totally.
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah.
Totally. No, I know. And that's, and again, I think as each situation is different, and I think each person handles it differently. And I think, yeah, just allowing grace and kind of allowing, you know, whatever response, and understanding that that response is coming from a certain place that maybe you might not know completely about, or you might not know someone's whole story. The thing is, it's tricky. And I really think that each space, especially each office, is also different. I mean, publishing, part of why it's so hard, why those microaggressions happen, is because young people, especially Black and white, at least where I was working and a lot of other industries like it, feel like they can't speak up about something that's bothering them. Yeah. And so when that power dynamic's happening, that makes it even more complicated. And really, yeah, having spaces that feel more open, it's that's hard to, like, put a name on, hard to just make a space into a safe space, you know?
We're chatting with Zakiya Dalila Harris. The book is called The Other Black Girl. There's a lovely passage in the book, Zakiya, about the bonding time between Black mothers and their daughters in doing their hair. And you sort of reflect that white mothers don't have that kind of hours at a time space to try and help Black girls with their hair. I was reminded of this because my best friend from college adopted a Black girl. She's my goddaughter. And she used to tell me, and my friend has this very, very frizzy, tons of frizzy curly hair, but it's not Black hair. It's a different hair. And I remember vividly the struggles that she had with her daughter trying to figure out her hair, hours at a time trying to figure out her hair. You know, the hair, and you have the comb on the cover here, and the hair is very much a part of the plot of the book. I want you to tell me a little bit about Black hair. Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, I had a very complicated relationship with my hair growing up, mostly around white people, white girls specifically. We'd have sleepovers, makeover time would come, and I'd just be sitting in a corner because I had braids, and it just didn't. I was not really allowed to let anybody touch my hair, take my hair out, because no one would know what to do with it. So for a while, I wanted to relax my hair. And then when I turned 10, that was the age my mom allowed me to get my hair straightened. I did that for like 14 years. And I mean, when I tell you, like, I really wanted straight hair, Lisa, like, I would draw little cartoons of me with ponytails. That was the hairstyle I wanted, ponytails. And I had that for a while. But as I got older, I went to grad school. I moved to Brooklyn. There were a lot of protests happening. This was 2014. And I was just starting to question a lot of my upbringing, not my parents, because while I was in the white space, like, I went home, it was just Black everywhere. Like, I knew my heritage, I knew where I came from. But I questioned why my school life and my social life really overpowered my home life in a lot of ways, in the sense of, like, me wanting to have straight hair. And a few years ago, I chopped it all off and I went natural. And in that moment, I felt and still feel so much more empowered. And this is to say that, you know, people who do relax their hair, no judgment at all. But for me, I knew it wasn't the right reasons. And I think about, though, way before I relaxed my hair, how much time I would spend with my mom when it was still natural. And I remember watching TV shows with her as she would, you know, blow dry it. And I remember how painful it was to have her comb it because I'm very tender headed. And those memories are things that a lot of other Black women I know have also experienced, as well as that feeling like we're kind of bound by our hair, but also it can be really empowering. So those two kind of conflicting things, something I've really been interested in.
Well, I thought that was a very brilliant metaphor of using the hair and the hair relaxing as a way to force people to just chill out and relax.
Pretty good metaphor. Exactly.
How did that come to you, Zakiya? How did that come to you?
Well, you know, the hair, I knew there would be hair in the book. I knew that would be a main part of Nella and Hazel, the two Black women at the center of this book's relationship. But actually, and I knew that there would be some kind of controlling element in this book, but the actual idea of, oh, why isn't it just related to the hair grease came from my partner, because I had told him all about the story and where I thought, you know, here's who's pulling the strings. But he was like, oh, what about the grease? Mm. Like, oh, of course, because like I'm so in it, meaning the hair world of, you know, relaxing, or I'm sorry, of greasing my hair, of twisting it and braiding it at night. And I spent so much time thinking and doing things with it, but it was so obvious. It was right in front of my face.
It's fantastic.
And that was just another example, again, of how much it really is just everywhere, but also I don't think about it.
We're chatting with Zakiya DeLila Harris, the other Black girl. There's a little Stepford Wives in there, and I thought about the fact that that was Connecticut too, Zakiya. You know that, right? Yeah.
I did. Yeah. And I hadn't read the book until this summer, actually, because I feel that. I'd seen the movie years ago, and it just feels even more. It feels even more like my book, and that's exactly what I wanted. Yeah. I love that book.
Oh, yeah. And then Mad Men, you know, I was talking with my daughter about the book. She's your age. And she said, you know, Mom, she hasn't read it yet, but she will. She said, you know, it sounds like the archetypes of Mad Men. With Peggy, and who was the other gal?
Joan.
Mm-hmm. And how one, you know, climbs up the ladder, you know, because of the expectations, and then the other one has to fight. A little bit of like what Nella and Hazel, like a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but even though I love Mad Men, and I've seen the whole series. And you know, another thing I've gotten once that I still think about is All About Eve.
Oh, I love All About Eve.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's different, but also, again, I feel like this is such a timeless tale, right? Of especially for women, because we have to be everything all the time, and especially in corporate spaces and male-dominated, white male-dominated spaces.
So, Zakiya DeLila Harris, question. Have you gotten any negative pushback from within the Black community about some of your portrayals in the book?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've gotten, I think, almost every possible.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, not like, I don't look for them, but, I mean, internet, right? I had one person comment on, I mean, this is a little, maybe it's not trivial because someone commented on it, the fact that there's cursing, that these Black educated women are cursing, and it's not right. I've gotten some kind of, I don't know if they're necessarily negative, but comments on the grease and whether or not it's going to kind of scare people away from wanting to use Black hair products and that kind of thing. And then the ending, of course.
Yeah, the ending.
The thing that, you know, a lot of people respond to. But you know, I think the more Black people, this is a really big generalization and I couldn't possibly put a number on it, but I do feel more so people of color specifically have really seen the ending and understood the ending and felt it a little more in the way that I wanted it to land than non people of color. But again, that's not, I think that might have to do also with the fact that they've experienced, you know, what it's like to be in these spaces and wonder how much of themselves you know, they can keep up and keep bringing it to work, and whether or not they want to really keep doing that, if they want to just kind of tune out and just be themselves, you know?
Well, the reason why I think that if I was Black, and it's hard to imagine whatever, but the reason why I think for me, even as a white person, it landed in a very disappointing way is because you would think in 2021, you know, that it would have a more optimistic ending in the sense of people being able to live who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
But you didn't see it that way, Zakiya. You didn't see it that way.
Oh, no, I did want it. I did want that. To clarify, I think I should say, like, they wanted it, the negative one, the one that I didn't necessarily expect was the feeling that the ending just shouldn't have been the ending, whereas I did want it to disappoint people. I did want to make people really...
I know.
Exactly what you said. And and also question, how could we have saved Nella? You know,
we
have saved Nella?
Right, right. Well, it's a beautiful novel. Is this your debut novel? Is this your first novel?
It is.
Oh, okay. We you know what? We, in our group, in our grouping, in my tribe, we're going to spit a few times and give a few poo-poos and knockwoods and Kanahuras, because I don't want anything to, God forbid, jinx you, because you have such a beautiful future ahead. If this is your first novel, I can't wait to see what else comes out of your brain and out of your pen. You know what? As long as I'm talking to you on the phone, I'm going to just say this. You can say no. It's okay. I started with a group of friends 30 years ago, 32 years ago to be exact, a book club. We're only about 8 women. And we now meet virtually since COVID because we're all over the place. Would there be any chance that you would step in for a Zoom for a few minutes if we chose your book as book club?
Oh, that's so sweet.
I figured I'd
ask. I love that.
Would you?
I love that.
Yeah?
I would. I'm pausing on book clubs for now just because I had a little burnout this year.
Okay.
But early 2022.
All right.
I'd love to do that. Is
That's
that okay?
Good. 100%, Zakiya. And I'd love to be able to reach you privately. So before we have to let you go, let Andrew know how I can reach you off air. I congratulate
Absolutely.
You on this book. I'm glad that I discovered it and read the whole thing through. It's controversial. It's topical. But you know what? It's a great read. And in the end, that's your job as a writer, to write a great read. And that's what you've done.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for having me. This is such a pleasure.
Me
Thank
too.
Thank you for reading.
Me too. Zakiya Dalila Harris, The Other Black Girl, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more of The Lisa Wexler Show coming up.